Reframing the conversation using the human flourishing framework. I first discovered that people's operating framework could be quickly challenged and changed with the issue of one's method of evaluation. As I have discussed throughout this book, by default, most people today, instead of considering the full context, benefits and side effects, with regard to fossil fuels, will look only for the negative side effects of fossil fuels and wildly distort them, while ignoring their fundamental benefits to our ability to flourish. This bias can seem so entrenched that it is impossible to do anything about. But one day I tried an experiment that convinced me otherwise. I tried framing one-on-one conversations by asking, in a relatable way, if the other person agreed with the principle of considering the full context. I asked, "Do you agree we need to look at the full context when we look at fossil fuels?" By that I mean we need to look at both the benefits and negative side effects of all sources of energy, not just the negative side effects of fossil fuels and the benefits of solar and wind. What do you think people said? They said yes, as have many, many people since. Not only that, but once the conversation was framed around the principle of the full context, others became much more inclined to actually consider the full context, including the usually ignored benefits of fossil fuels, than they otherwise would have been. A major reason for this dynamic is that when someone explicitly agrees to an idea, such as considering the full context, they are much more likely to apply it in practice. Robert Cialdini, in the renowned persuasion book Influence, calls this the principle of integrity. Why is framing the principle of the full context so effective when people seem to be so entrenched in their operating framework of considering only the negative side effects of fossil fuels? Because in this case, and in many others, their operating framework is implicit and unscrutinized rather than explicit and considered. No one actually believes that it's proper to look at only the negative side effects of something and ignore its benefits. Thus, when I made the issue explicit and gave the clear positive alternative of considering the full context, most people would choose considering the full context. Tip: I find it's much more effective to get someone to agree positively to look at the full context than to get them to admit that they were being biased by considering only the negative side effects. While I first discovered that I could reframe conversations around the full context in literal one-on-one conversations, I found that this applied to conversations in every medium: interviews, articles, podcasts, and of course, books. This was a thrilling discovery. It meant that I could do something relatively easy, getting agreement to consider the full context, that would then frame the conversation in a way that would make it far easier for the other person to understand and agree with my evaluation of fossil fuels. My success in reframing fossil fuel conversations around the method of considering the full context raised the question, how far can I take this? Can I also reframe the more fundamental framing ideas at issue, above all establishing the goal of advancing human flourishing? Happily, the answer proved to be yes. The whole anti-impact framework consists of largely implicit, unscrutinized beliefs that persist for most people only because their true nature and positive alternatives have not been made explicit. The most important idea of the human flourishing framework in reframing the conversation is the goal of advancing human flourishing, in contrast to the goal of eliminating human impact. Fortunately, when the alternatives are explained clearly, most people will choose the goal of advancing human flourishing. A key aspect of explaining that goal clearly is making sure it, not eliminating impact, is associated with a livable environment for human beings. It's crucial to explain how human flourishing includes an amazing environment for us to live in, including good air quality, good water quality, and safety from climate, and that an unimpacted environment is a terrible environment. In this connection, it's also important to emphasize that advancing human flourishing is a long-range goal, because anti-impact thinkers like to promote the fallacy that impacting our environment is necessarily self-destructive in the long term. When the goal of advancing human flourishing, the environment-valuing long-range goal of advancing human flourishing, is made clear, and the environment-destroying goal of eliminating human impact is made clear, for most people, it's an easy choice which one they prefer. Another key reframing, from delicate nurturer to wild potential, is also mostly a matter of clearly explaining the alternatives. The delicate nurturer assumption has a major vulnerability. It is obviously false once its meaning and the meaning of its alternative, the wild potential premise, are made explicit and clear. The idea that the planet is wild potential that requires massive, intelligent human impact is almost self-evident to most people once it is pointed out to them. In my persuasion experiments, I found that with the right language, I could quickly reframe the conversation from the delicate nurture assumption to the wild potential premise. For example, in one-on-one conversation, I have found the following type of question very effective. Would you agree that the planet in its natural unimpacted state is not a very good place for human beings to live? Because it's so hard to get our most basic necessities, and because there are so many natural dangers from climate and from other species? Most will say yes. And then I can add, would you agree that we need to impact the planet a lot to live at a high level, to flourish? Again, most will say yes. I have found that in particular, the idea of human beings positively impacting the safety and cleanliness of our environment using fossil fuels is powerful because it's so obviously true and yet never discussed. For example, I might ask in a one-on-one conversation, would you agree that many forms of human impact on our environment are good? For example, when we build high-powered irrigation systems to combat drought, which used to kill hundreds of thousands of people a year, and now kills only a tiny fraction of that, or when we transform naturally dirty water into unnaturally clean water using modern high-powered water purification systems. Thus, the mighty delicate nurture assumption is not so mighty after all, when its meaning and the meaning of its opposite are made explicit. Reframing the conversation around the human flourishing framework, the goal of advancing human flourishing, clear environmental terminology, the wild potential premise, and the method of full context evaluation is 100% possible. And when the conversation is reframed around the human flourishing framework, arguing to 100 for a fossil future is both possible and incredibly powerful. The undeniable power of properly framed fundamental truths. Logically and in my experience, to the extent the conversation around energy, environment, and climate is framed properly around the goal of advancing human flourishing and the rest of the human flourishing framework, the impossible becomes possible. People are open to the unexpected conclusion that I have argued for in this book, and that I hope I have at least begun to persuade you of. Global human flourishing requires more fossil fuel use, not less. When the conversation around fossil fuels in particular is properly framed, the key question that needs to be answered to evaluate what to do about fossil fuels becomes, from a human flourishing perspective, what will be the benefits and side effects of continuing massive fossil fuel use in our naturally deficient and dangerous world? Once this is the question, there are four fundamental truths that someone must grasp to understand that the answer is, continuing massive fossil fuel use will make the world far more livable for far more people. 1. The uniquely cost-effective energy we get from fossil fuels makes the world an unnaturally livable place, including unnaturally safe from climate, for billions of people. See Chapter 4. 2. The world is still a barely livable place for billions of people who lack cost-effective energy. See Chapters 4 and 5. 3. No combination of alternatives, least of all unreliable solar and wind, can replace fossil fuels' ability to provide cost-effective energy for the billions who have it and the billions who need it. See chapters 5 and 6. 4. Fossil fuel CO2 emissions have contributed to, and will continue to contribute to, slow, masterable, and often beneficial warming, as well as significant global greening, nothing resembling a crisis. See chapters 7, 8, and 9. Before the fossil fuel conversation is properly framed, each of these fundamental truths is some combination of not considered and inconceivable. But when the conversation is properly framed, each of these fundamental truths becomes 1. Extremely hard to deny, 2. Extremely discrediting of the mainstream approach to fossil fuels, and 3. Extremely effective at changing someone's view of fossil fuels. Here, in my experience, is how this plays out in practice. The uniquely cost-effective energy we get from fossil fuels makes the world an unnaturally livable place, including unnaturally safe from climate, for billions of people. Once the conversation is properly framed, and one is looking from a human flourishing perspective at the full effects of fossil fuel use on human flourishing in our naturally deficient and dangerous world, the preceding point is hard to deny. It requires some explanation, of course, including the world's unnatural, amazing, increasing livability, the human flourishing hockey sticks, the world's unnatural, amazing safety from climate, decline in climate-related disaster deaths, the role of cost-effective energy and machine labor in the world's livability, that they amplify and expand our ability to produce the values that nourish, protect, and fulfill us, and fossil fuels' unique cost-effectiveness as the only source that provides low-cost, on-demand, versatile, global-scale energy. But each of these points is relatively easy to explain, and once explained, extremely hard to deny. Why? Because most people already have most of the knowledge that is needed to validate these points. That knowledge has just been deactivated by the anti-impact framework. Once we're looking at the world and its climate from a human flourishing perspective, if we know even a bit of history, it's clear that the world has never been more livable. Once we recognize how amazingly livable our world is, we become interested in what causes that, and the role of cost-effective machine labor, and therefore cost-effective energy, is pretty obvious. The world's amazingness depends on all these machines doing all this work for us. And once just a few data points are observed about where the world does and doesn't get different kinds of energy, it's clear that, at least today, fossil fuels are a uniquely cost-effective source of energy. The above points are not only borderline undeniable and obviously crucial when clearly explained, they also have a significant discrediting effect on the mainstream approach to fossil fuels, because the mainstream knowledge system so clearly denies or ignores them. The mainstream knowledge system portrays the world as unnaturally unlivable, cost-effective energy as trivial, and fossil fuels as just one source of energy among many. Once all of these are revealed to an honest person as clearly false, that person will rightly start to become suspicious of everything they're hearing from the mainstream approach. Thus, when the conversation is properly framed and specific truths are clearly explained, it's actually close to undeniable and highly discrediting of the mainstream knowledge system that the uniquely cost-effective energy we get from fossil fuels makes the world an unnaturally livable place, including unnaturally safe from climate, for billions of people. And once someone understands this point about the fundamental role of fossil fuels in our unnaturally livable world, that alone dramatically changes their view of fossil fuels. The world's massive fossil fuel use goes from something that has made the world unnaturally unlivable to something that makes it unnaturally livable. This pattern of a properly framed conversation, making it possible and highly effective to share a fundamental truth about fossil fuels and human flourishing, that is, one, extremely hard to deny, 2, extremely discrediting of the mainstream approach to fossil fuels, and 3, extremely effective at changing someone's view of fossil fuels, applies to the other 3 fundamental truths about fossil fuels. The world is still a barely livable place for billions of people who lack cost-effective energy. Once the role of fossil fuels' uniquely cost-effective energy in today's unnaturally livable world is made clear, it's undeniable that billions more people need the cost-effectiveness of energy that fossil fuels provide. This is another case where almost everyone knows the relevant facts, that there are billions of poor people who will remain poor so long as they don't use high-energy machines, but has been blinded to them by the anti-impact framework. And this is another case where realizing the undeniable truth discredits the mainstream knowledge system. The fact that our knowledge system almost never expresses any concern about lack of energy reveals it to be untrustworthy. Once fundamental truth numbers 1 and 2 are established, it is clear that ultra-cost-effective energy from fossil fuels makes our world amazing, but that amazingness is largely not experienced by billions of people. This creates moral urgency for dramatically expanding energy production, or as I like to call it, expanding human empowerment. Expanding human empowerment rightly becomes a powerful moral goal, a 100. And given the recognized uniqueness of fossil fuels and the need for far more of what they do, it doesn't take too much to establish the next point, that fossil fuels will be irreplaceable for the foreseeable future. No combination of alternatives, least of all unreliable solar and wind, can replace fossil fuels' ability to provide cost-effective energy for the billions who have it and the billions who need it. Once it is clear that fossil fuels today uniquely provide ultra-cost-effective energy, that far more is needed, and both truths are denied by our knowledge system, the idea of full replacement by solar and wind is extremely implausible. Explaining just a few points, such as the following, will make the irreplaceability of fossil fuels for the foreseeable future virtually undeniable. Fossil fuels are 80% of the world's energy and are still growing fast, especially in China and the rest of the developing world. Fossil fuels produce not just electricity, but also mobile energy and industrial heat energy, which are far harder to replace than electricity. Even for electricity, unreliable, parasitical solar and wind cannot replace fossil fuels and other reliable power plants, but rather add numerous new costs. Nuclear, the only source of energy besides fossil fuels that is naturally stored, naturally concentrated, and naturally abundant, is still generations away from global cost effectiveness, thanks in large part to criminalization by the anti-impact movement. As the above points are understood, the mainstream knowledge system is further discredited as biased, and, if its opposition to all forms of cost-effective energy is stressed, anti-energy. Once the unique cost-effectiveness of fossil fuels going forward is established, fossil fuel elimination becomes a terrifying and highly questionable possibility, and the movement that fights for fossil fuel elimination without acknowledging its catastrophic harms becomes highly questionable at best, whereas it previously seemed scientific and humane. Fossil fuel CO2 emissions have contributed to, and will continue to contribute to, slow, masterable, and often beneficial warming, as well as significant global greening, nothing resembling a crisis. The issue of fossil fuel CO2 emissions is often thought of as overwhelmingly an issue of specialized science that we don't know anything about going in. But actually, most elements of understanding why CO2 emissions will contribute to slow, masterable, and often beneficial warming are readily understood by most people. To start off with masterability, once the undeniably massive level of natural climate danger is pointed out, and our enormous fossil-fueled mastery abilities are pointed out, the basic expectation that follows is that climate catastrophe, let alone apocalypse, is extremely unlikely, particularly once one is aware that we've already been emitting CO2 for 170 years and had 1 degree Celsius of warming and a 98% decline in the rate of climate-related disaster death. And once fossil-fueled climate mastery is established, our climate mastery-denying knowledge system is discredited accordingly. The fact that warming will often be beneficial is obvious once one stops thinking of the planet as a delicate nurturer for which all human impact must be bad. It's clear that warming will, at minimum, benefit a lot of people, and that there's something wrong with our knowledge system for pointing out only negatives 99% of the time. Ditto for global greening, which is undeniable once observed, and is undeniably wrong for our knowledge system to ignore. As for the warming being slow and therefore definitely masterable, most of the key facts involved are not hard to establish. We are at very low points of CO2 and temperature in the history of this planet, and have no way of getting close to the much higher CO2 levels under which life flourished in a much more tropical world. It has warmed 1 degree Celsius in 170 years. Sea level rises are far, far slower than they were for our ancestors, who had virtually no climate mastery abilities. All of these facts are undeniable, and yet are clearly denied or distorted by our knowledge system, further discrediting it. Once the actual nature of CO2 emissions is established, along with the other 3 fundamental truths, expanding the world's massive use of fossil fuels goes from obviously disastrous for the world to obviously vital for the world. This is not just true in theory. I've found it to be true time and time again in practice. Even in a 1-hour speech, I've found that I can make a big impact on many people by reframing the conversation at the outset, then giving a relatively brief explanation of the fundamental truths above. By the end, many find plausible, if not highly convincing, a conclusion they would have considered inconceivable at the outset. Global human flourishing requires more oil, coal, and natural gas, not less. Let's summarize. By reframing the conversation from the anti-impact framework to the human flourishing framework and arguing to 100 using the 4 fundamental truths about fossil fuels and human flourishing, many people who regard it as inconceivable that expanding fossil fuel use could be good will come to see it as undeniable that expanding fossil fuel use is good. This is an approach that others besides me have used to a significant degree with a lot of success, and that you, by strategically sharing our work, can use to significantly influence others as well. The growing energy humanist movement. My experience successfully reframing the conversation and arguing to 100 for fossil fuels and energy freedom has given me confidence that this approach is the key to bringing about a flourishing fossil future. This confidence has been amplified by observing the success of other energy advocates, some inspired by me, some not, who are engaging in some form of reframing and arguing to 100, and having much more success than the traditional arguing to 0 approach at fighting the fossil fuel elimination movement and, often, fighting for fossil fuels and energy freedom. The essence of what I have in common with like-minded energy advocates is 1, placing primary value on human life, 2, recognizing cost-effective energy as a crucial value, and 3, weighing benefits and side effects. I call those of us with these commonalities the energy humanist movement. Here are a few examples. The highly effective Michael Schellenberger, author of Apocalypse Never, Why Environmental Alarmism Hurts Us All, is a former environmental activist and advocate of renewables. He explicitly challenges the anti-humanism and false assumptions of the anti-fossil fuel movement and uses a pro-human and reality-based approach to refute climate catastrophism and call for more energy, especially more nuclear energy, and more development. He has become extremely effective in recent years, gaining respect for his moral seriousness and his precise analysis. Bjorn Lomborg, known as the Skeptical Environmentalist, a statistician and author, most recently of False Alarm: How Climate Change Panic Costs Us Trillions, has gained respect by trying to very explicitly quantify the actual threat of man-made climate impacts to human life and to compare those impacts with other threats humanity faces. His argument that climate impacts are not catastrophic and should not be the biggest priority is very hard to argue with. Robert Bryce, a journalist, energy expert, author of several influential energy books, including Power Hungry, and a frequent contributor to the Wall Street Journal, focuses on the moral imperative of expanding energy use, especially in the poorest parts of the world, and does an excellent job of comparing the actual abilities of fossil fuels and alternatives to meet the world's energy needs. Life Powered, a group that was significantly inspired by my work, explicitly takes a human flourishing approach to energy issues and has become a significant influencer on energy policy, particularly in Texas. While I have plenty of differences with other energy humanists, I think there are three ways we are all improving how people think about energy. 1. Improving the framework within which energy, environmental, and climate issues are discussed. 2. Promoting the crucial value of expanding human empowerment. 3. Making clear that you can believe that humans impact climate without being a climate catastrophist or an advocate of fossil fuel elimination. The more prominent energy humanists there are, the more people are exposed to a better way of thinking about energy, and the more people are exposed to at least some of the essential facts that justify a flourishing fossil future under a policy of energy freedom. The growing success of energy humanists points the way to what you can do to make a huge impact. Reframe the conversation and argue to 100 by sharing our work far and wide. The limitless power of sharing. Movements for change are often associated with public advocates who devote their lives to the movement, engaging in extensive writing and speaking. While such people are crucial to a movement, equally crucial and less heralded are people who do not devote their lives to the movement, but still avidly share prominent materials with people they know. Sharing materials is an incredibly underrated means of influence. While it is admirable if you want to be outspoken on behalf of a cause, the fact is that with the internet, we all essentially have a free printing press and video replication company that we can use over and over and over, whether we are creating materials ourselves or sharing materials created by others. Now that you understand the power of reframing and arguing to 100, you can combine those with the power of sharing to have enormous influence without taking up too much time. Simply share my best work and that of other energy humanists, the work that most effectively reframes the conversation and argues to 100, with as many people as you can. The right resource shared with the right person can change someone's mind permanently. Take this note I got from a reader, James. Before coming across your work, I sort of believed in the anti-fossil fuel movement. From my education in very liberal environmentalist Vermont, I was never shown the pros of fossil fuels, only the cons. Flash forward to yesterday, I wore my I Love Fossil Fuels t-shirt to school for the first time. I never had a conversation with James directly. He learned about my work from someone who recommended it to him. That person had a huge influence just by sharing my work with someone who might be open to it. Not only can the right resource shared with the right person change their mind, but it can also change minds when those people recommend that resource to others. And you never know who will discover good resources and what they'll do with them. One increasingly common phenomenon I'm seeing is resource sharing leading to the creation of new energy humanists. Thanks to regular people who shared my work, it has inspired new energy humanists in different areas. For example, economist Saifedean Amos, a leading Bitcoin authority and author of The Bitcoin Standard, publicly makes the moral case for a fossil future and has added a major chapter on energy to his book on economics. Adam Anderson, CEO of Innovex, an oilfield services company, made waves by making the moral case for oil and natural gas in an open letter he wrote to the North Face, which had refused to sell his company jackets with its logo because oil and gas production supposedly goes against the North Face's ethical standards. Anderson's case was so articulate that it was covered widely, from the Wall Street Journal to Newsweek, and the North Face could not muster a coherent response. Indian energy and environmental researcher Vijay Jayaraj has written powerful articles and essays for a wide variety of publications about how fossil fuels are the key to India and other nations bringing themselves out of energy poverty and therefore all poverty. How amazing is it that through the simple act of sharing energy humanist resources, you can win over people and even create new energy humanists? As to where to start in sharing, I immodestly recommend my own materials. A lot of the work I've done over the last 14 years has been geared toward figuring out how to help like-minded people become influential in a relatively small amount of time by giving them shareable, properly framed materials. My goal has been to give those who agree with me a virtually unlimited ability to influence others through sharing materials that reframe the issues properly and argue to 100. On the website alexepstein.com/fossilfuture, I have an extensive list of free shareable materials, many short form, using the human flourishing framework to make the moral case for a fossil future. Additionally, to help you share the truth on the many, many concrete questions and policies about fossil fuels that come up on a daily basis, I have created the website energytalkingpoints.com, which has hundreds of powerful, properly framed, easily shareable, well-referenced talking points. It sounds almost quaint to say share good stuff, but it's the ultimate leverage. The classic method of sharing is word of mouth. Just tell someone that you found a person or resource persuasive and encourage them to check it out. Simple and incredibly effective. Social media is also an incredible way of sharing materials. My personal favorite platform is Twitter. My handle is @AlexEpstein. Because it has the most influential people, and the right message at the right time can go viral, even if shared by someone obscure. But on any of the major platforms, you can reach many active-minded people who might be open to energy humanist views. Another incredibly effective and free way to share the work of energy humanists is to recommend us to your favorite shows. Some of my most impactful appearances, such as being on the popular YouTube show The Rubin Report, or The Adam Carolla Show, have come from viewers and listeners saying, "You've got to have Alex Epstein on." Their simple acts enabled me to reach hundreds of thousands of people. If you found this book particularly powerful and persuasive, I hope you share word of it with others. One of the major reasons I spent 3 years writing a new book on fossil fuels was to create the ultimate shareable resource. Additionally, if you have the means to buy this book for others, I hope you do. In addition to sharing this book with friends, family, and colleagues, you can also go to the website alexepstein.com/fossilfutureeducation and buy copies of Fossil Future for students and teachers at high schools and colleges that have specifically requested them. I offered this kind of program for The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels and got literally thousands of thoughtful requests from teachers and students, including from places you might never expect a request, like an AP environmental science teacher from California who requested a copy. Here's a note I got from one teacher I sent a copy to. "I'd like to thank you for sending me a free copy of The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels. As a government and economics teacher, I've already used the concepts of the book in my classes to ask students to describe the benefits as well as the drawbacks to using fossil fuels. A science teacher in the school has already been very vocal about challenging why fossil fuels are a good thing for humans, but I've been able to successfully engage him using your book." One additional way to reframe the conversation and argue to 100 on fossil fuels and energy freedom, if you have the resources and inclination to do so, is to support my work. I have a program I call Accelerator, in which all funds contributed go not to me, but to projects that help accelerate the influence of my work, a combination of research and development, to improve the quality and persuasiveness of my content, and promotion, such as online advertising. You can contribute at alexepstein.com/accelerate. Whatever your time and resources, you can make a huge impact by sharing my work and that of other energy humanists with whatever audiences you have access to. Because the issue of energy is everywhere, usually raised in connection with climate change, there is a need and opportunity everywhere to reframe the conversation and argue to 100 for a flourishing fossil future and energy freedom. Everywhere includes every industry, every part of the world, every hobby, every community. Whatever your industry, location, passions, and community, you can make a huge and much-needed difference by understanding the power of reframing and arguing to 100, then avidly sharing the best resources. The benefits of being an energy champion. Since this is a book that espouses the method of considering the full context, I cannot talk about working to make a difference on fossil fuels and energy freedom without acknowledging the legitimate concerns you may have about the downsides of working to make a difference. One concern you may have is, what about all the opposition I will face? In today's cancel culture, some readers of this book in certain positions could get in trouble for advancing these ideas. One answer to this concern is that you can always share good materials privately if you're concerned about the public consequences. But also know that if you do speak up, there are many people who will be interested in your perspective and support you, especially if you convey a clear and compelling framework for thinking about fossil fuels. You will stand out from people who just mouth popular claims to gain status. I find that when I honestly share my perspective and how I arrived at it, with everyone from Uber drivers to dentists to furniture salespeople, the number one reaction I get is intrigue, not hostility. Many people consciously or subconsciously resent that they are not allowed to have their own thoughts about this issue, lest they be labeled a climate change denier or some other sort of eco-villain. When those people hear a thoughtful perspective from you, they will be very appreciative. It is incredibly rewarding to genuinely change hearts and minds, and you can 100% do so if you follow the guidance I have shared. You may even make some great friends in the process of sharing your perspective on fossil fuels. Another question you might have is, how much of a difference can I actually make, given my limited time and resources? Here I have three answers. The first answer is, reiterating what I've said so far, that by sharing the right materials, you can make a huge impact. You become, in effect, a mental magnet who exerts a pull on the minds of others, who then exert a pull on the minds of others, and so on. The second answer is that because energy is such a high-leverage issue, every bit of progress counts, including anything you can do to stop bad policies. Because the cost-effectiveness of energy determines the cost-effectiveness of everything, every penny lower that the price of oil goes makes a big difference. Every project that gets approved instead of stopped, every bogus anti-fossil fuel lawsuit that gets thrown out, every 100% renewable resolution that gets rejected, every new opportunity to use fossil fuels in the unempowered world makes a big difference. Third, if enough of us share the moral case for a fossil future, turning the tide is a lot closer than you might think. This is because of a final benefit of making the moral case for a fossil future: the ability to break a moral monopoly. To change the trajectory of the culture, we don't need to try to change everyone's mind on this issue. What we really need to do is something much easier. We need to break the moral monopoly of the moral case for eliminating fossil fuels. The fossil fuel elimination movement is an incredibly fragile creature. It is based on the indefensible anti-impact framework, which has an anti-human goal, eliminating human impact in general, and CO2 emissions in particular, a false and anti-human view of the planet, the delicate nurturer assumption, and a thoroughly irrational method of evaluation, ignoring benefits and catastrophizing side effects. The fossil fuel elimination movement is powerful only because it has a moral monopoly, meaning that it is widely considered the only moral position. Anything with a moral monopoly ends up attracting huge numbers of opportunistic people seeking status and money by associating with something uncontroversially good. But if that monopoly is broken, these opportunistic followers scatter. What I've found over and over is that when there is a new, morally confident alternative on the table, the moral case for eliminating fossil fuels loses much of its power. For example, when I speak to college audiences and anti-fossil fuel activists show up, but supporters of my views also show up, the anti-fossil fuel activists are unusually muted. They're not used to losing their moral monopoly, and when it is gone, they are stuck with the merits of their meager arguments in the face of mine. Another example of the power of breaking the moral monopoly is when people start to say, "You know, I don't totally agree with you that we should use more fossil fuels, but you make some good points." For example, when I did an interview with the popular YouTube host Dave Rubin, he did not entirely agree with my viewpoint, though I hope to convince him much more with this book. But he nevertheless said I had a point and has repeatedly summarized my arguments, more or less accurately, to others. At an event held by Rubin, an audience member also demonstrated the power of persuading people that the moral case for a fossil future is at least a compelling argument, when he said of me, "Obviously, I believe in scientific consensus and things like that, but when I listened to him, it was really interesting because I could not think of a counterargument. He actually doesn't deny climate change. He goes at it from an interesting view about cost-benefit analysis, looking at what do we get out of fossil fuels versus what do we get out of renewables. I have looked at a few other videos, and I have not heard a coherent rebuttal to it, which is weird, because it's very much against what everyone else says." Observe that this audience member said of me, he actually doesn't deny climate change. What's happening here is he's breaking out of the mainstream knowledge system's false alternatives that either you're a climate change believer who believes in climate catastrophe, fossil fuel elimination, and even 100% renewables, or you're a climate change denier and therefore think fossil fuels are okay. He's recognizing that there's a different approach, which he is referring to as cost-benefit analysis, in which one considers the issue of fossil fuels' impact on climate in its full context from a human flourishing perspective, and even though fossil fuels do impact climate, that's not necessarily even negative, and even if it is negative, it can be possible that fossil fuels' positives far outweigh it. As I and other energy humanists rise in prominence and continue to reframe the conversation, this false dichotomy on which much of the anti-fossil fuel movement's moral monopoly rests, because it gives it a false monopoly on science, will start to break. No longer will it be possible to smear fossil fuel advocates as climate change deniers, and it will start to become clear that those who use that term are usually climate mastery deniers who want to deprive the world of energy for anti-human reasons. Once the anti-fossil fuel moral monopoly is broken, and therefore far more people are willing to consider the moral case for a fossil future, then many people who refuse to think about the issue now will feel compelled to think about it, or move on to some other easy issue. There will no longer be an easy answer on fossil fuels, because so many of us will be saying that to oppose fossil fuels is to oppose a livable world for 8 billion people. One factor that will contribute to breaking the moral monopoly against fossil fuels is reality. Already we are seeing clear evidence that there's something wrong with the policies of the anti-fossil fuel movement. As I've been writing this book, my adopted home state, California, has been besieged by blackouts due to over-reliance on unreliable solar and wind. Around the world, there are popular movements against the higher energy prices brought about by green policies, such as the Yellow Vest movement in France. At the same time, countries that take energy seriously, like China and India, are using and will continue to use more fossil fuels, exposing the lie that green energy will rapidly replace fossil fuels. Soon enough, events will reveal more and more glaringly that being anti-fossil fuel is a truly destructive position. As events unfold, if enough of us are reframing the conversation and arguing to 100 for a fossil future, there will be a rapid uptake of the truth. At a certain point, there will be a tipping point in the conversation, the point at which a real, honest conversation about the comparative benefits and side effects of fossil fuels begins. And once that conversation begins, the anti-impact framework and its anti-human distortion of facts will be no match for the human flourishing framework and its careful pro-human evaluation of facts. Sooner or later, and with your help sooner, billions of people will see what I started seeing 14 years ago, that for 8 billion people to live in a nourishing, safe, opportunity-filled world, a world in which, for the first time ever, global human flourishing is possible, we need more oil, coal, and natural gas, not less. This is Alex Epstein. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Fossil Future: Why Global Human Flourishing Requires More Oil, Coal, and Natural Gas, Not Less. This program was directed by Tony Huds, executive producer Nithya Rajendran, edited by BookTrack. Text copyright 2022 by Alex Epstein. Production copyright 2022, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.